attention.
They are not ready for prime time.
Prime time.
Prime time.
Prime time. That's the name.
Prime time.
Prime time.
What time is it? Showtime prime time.
It's XL prime time.
It is super scintillating sensational.
Featuring Joe C.
You have to have an opinion.
Hacker.
Who the heck is this guy?
Matt Hayes.
You can say whatever you want, I don't care.
And Leon Searcy.
Get me riled up.
How you like me now?
Monday Night Football last night. A crazy finish. Overtime win for those Las Vegas Raiders over the Baltimore Ravens, and that puts week one officially in the books for the National Football League. 17 more weeks to go, 16 more games to go for your Jacksonville Jaguars. So we'll jump in on them, but we got a lot of college football that we'll get into as well. Today, we've got Jacob Copeland, one of the wide receivers for the Florida Gators, scheduled to join us in the 1 o'clock hour. So we're definitely going to get into the college football storylines, especially with Florida and Alabama being one of the biggest games this week. And we can look back on everything that happened this past Saturday. You know, Mondays is always about the Jaguars, and we're definitely going to stay on them as much as we possibly can. But we look at some of the other storylines coming out of the National Football League. There were a lot of good ones. There were also some bad ones. I don't think any of us ever would have predicted that the Houston Texans would start leading the AFC South 1-0 after the Jags, Colts, Tennessee Titans all went down on Sunday. So we got plenty to get into today. Brought to you by Beaver Chevrolet and Beaver Toyota on a beautiful Tuesday. I came walking in, fellas, steamy, already just hot as blazes. Steamy. We'll find out whether or not the rain will come this afternoon and cool us off a little bit. It is September. We're supposed to be cooling off just a little bit.
Look,
man.
I get it. I've lived in Florida my entire life, going on 38 years. This has been hot, man. It has been hot for the last 3 or 4 months. I'm ready for a little cool weather coming, so hopefully that's going to happen sooner rather than later. You know, I found myself yesterday after the show, 24-hour rule, right? 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon, trying to get it out of my system, what happened in Houston, Texas on Sunday. But, Leon, there was a problem. I made the mistake about 5:30 yesterday to go back and start to rewatch the first half of the game again. And shame on me. It was 24-hour rule. Should have just gotten rid of it off the DVR. And then I found myself feeling even worse again after watching it back a third time. And I have officially deleted it off my DVR after watching it one more time. Just terrible. Some of the penalties, the lack of execution, the lack of focus at time for the Jaguars. You could tell Urban Meyer yesterday in his press conference obviously wasn't happy, with good reason, with a lot of things that transpired on Sunday in Houston. But now here we go. I mean, the season's not going to slow down. Denver's coming in here on Sunday feeling really good about things. 1 o'clock kick at TIAA Bank Field, and it's one of those situations where you're going to now play 3 football games in the span of 11 days. You get Denver on Sunday, you get Arizona the following Sunday, and you're at Cincinnati on Thursday night. So you have 3 games in 11 days, and if you don't correct those mistakes from last week very, very quickly, this season could get away from you before it really even begins. So it's a key time in the season already for the Jaguars.
Well, we got to get you to the next, Hack. We got to get you to the next. 24-hour rule, we got to get you to the next. But the things that are all correctable, if you watch the game, everything relative to Trevor Lawrence is correctable. You know, the interceptions he's made, the overthrows, the underthrows, the route running, all that kind of stuff. The thing that's not correctable that has got to come from the players is the desire to play the game, to execute at the highest optimum performance. That's what's bothering me about this team, is that I keep saying it from yesterday. They don't play above themselves. They play exactly who they are, you know, which is a middle of the road team, a lower than a middle of the road team. Middle of the road is giving them a compliment. Yeah. I'm lower than a middle of the road team. We got that's desire, that's heart, that's preparation, that's determination, that's all that kind of stuff. That's what's more concerning to me, because some of that stuff with Trevor Lawrence is correctable. In film, or practice, the reads, the interceptions, the overthrows, and that. All the other stuff is the stuff that concerns me with this team.
But it's like I looked at the Las Vegas Raiders last night, middle of the pack team. They're projected to be 500, maybe compete for a wild card spot. By no means are they picked to win their division or represent the conference in the Super Bowl or anything. It looked like they played in a different league than the Jaguars, with what Derek Carr was doing out there and the defense making plays. And we have nothing like Max Crosby a fourth-round pick in Las Vegas, Max Crosby would come into Jacksonville. Hell, he might be better than Josh Allen. He might be the best defensive player on our team if he showed up today in a Jaguar uniform. And that's kind of disheartening when it looks like a team just plays that far above you and not much is even expected
right,
out of them.
But I guess make no mistake that they have invested mightily in John Gruden. And if anything goes in the right direction this year, this will be the first year it's going in the right direction for Gruden in his fourth year now after being offered that $75 million, was it even more than that, $90 million contract, all guaranteed. And so he's now, just now, trying to prove to the Davises of the world, the Raider Nation of the world, that he's got the plan that's actually going to be able to crack the code and get back to winning. And so it does suck when you look and you see the sample size that we saw from Jacksonville the first 60 minutes of this 2021 season, and it looked just as dreadful as it ever has, if not worse than what it's looked like before, Matt. And that's probably the thing that gets you the most. But look, there's quality out there in the NFL. We can see it. This is what this Duval dream is all about, is actually getting back to where you look like you can you fit the mold of going out there and competing week in and week out with everybody else. And right now they don't look like
it. Yeah, well, I mean, I think to Hack's point is, and he's right, is you watch other teams and they get to the quarterback. They affect the quarterback. You watch other teams and their receivers get separation. It's third and five and they've got separation. You watch other teams and defensively, their corners, it's third and six and they're right on receivers. There's no 3 or 4 or 5 yard cushion. Mm-hmm. So to Hack's point, he's exactly right. It's done differently in other teams because, look, the players are better. There's really no other way to say it. The players are better, and they work better as a team. So, you know, with most teams, it's the pass rush helps the secondary. With here, it's you either got one or the other, you got neither. And it's going to take time. They're going to, you know, they're revamping the roster. So, I mean, anybody who thought they were going to win 9-10 games this year and it was going to be great, and look, it's they were 1-15 last year for a reason.
Yeah.
They've lost 16 in a row now for a reason.
And it's honestly, this is the part that you don't want to hear, and this sounds like excuse making, but this is a roster that will take a longer time to rebuild because of just how flipping thin it was. There are other teams that are looking at depth. There are other teams looking at players that are ready to turn the corner and become stars. This team's just looking for a guy to turn the corner and be a sustained starter, period.
Well, I mean, the problem that I have, Matt, is that if you look at the rosters, they're relatively equal when you look at the roster. Houston and
I don't think they are, though. You know, we kept saying that, and the more I was looking at the Texans roster, the more I was thinking, they're better on the defensive line.
Well,
the
they're veteran-based.
They're better at linebacker.
Okay.
And they're better in the secondary.
Well, then they were supposed to beat us then.
Right. I think the idea that us saying that, you know, well, the rosters are the same, I don't think they are the same.
Well, I think the notion was is that you got Trevor, you got Urban, then all of a sudden that's the equalizer for whatever reason.
Well, the one thing about having Trevor Lawrence and Urban Meyer is it makes the season at least interesting. There were times last year where people weren't interested, didn't care. All they cared about was losing to be able to get Trevor Lawrence in the draft. At least Trevor Lawrence is here now, and he is going to be worth watching the entire year. But there was not a lot of other positives. The defense is terrible. I mean, let's call it what it is.
Right,
we can sugarcoat it all we want. The defense sucked on Sunday. Tyrod Taylor, Danny Amendola, Mark Ingram, Brandon Cooks. This is not 2017 when a lot of those guys were in their prime. This is 2021, and they went out there on Sunday and they beat the Jacksonville Jaguar defense to death. We could not stop them for most of the game. And people are living in a fantasy land if you think all of a sudden you're going to snap your fingers and you're going to shut down Teddy Bridgewater and Noah Fant and Cortland Sutton and Melvin Gordon this week. Oh, by the way, the week after, it's Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins who just put 38 on the Titans. And then you got to go play Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase and Joe Mixon on a Thursday night in Cincinnati. That's what I'm saying. 3 games in 11 days, you clearly just lost to a bad football team. You're going to start playing better football teams beginning this Sunday, and you could be staring 0-4 in the face very, very quickly.
Well, I'm trying to figure out where's Hamilton? Where's Brown? Where's Robertson? I mean, where's their impact in this game? I mean, the Houston Texans offensive line is not a world beater when it comes to offense. They're going to see better offensive lines somewhere down the road. Somehow, they got to fix this. So this
scary thought.
There's going to be a bludgeoning going on here in Jacksonville as far as running the ball because Houston's offensive line is not even middle of the tier offensive line. And they blocked them like they were the Dallas Cowboys in the 90s. I mean, they got after our defensive front. Talk about the 3-4 and how it's going to be adjusted. It's going to be attack style where we can stop the run and get after the pass. It was none of that on Sunday. I didn't see any of it.
Yeah, don't say it. I hate the idea of where we could be headed. I'm not going to – like I said really during the entire preseason that I need to see the product. Then I know what the product is, and then I can judge whether it's going to be good or bad. You go through the preseason, you saw a little bit of good. You definitely saw a lot of bad. And then you go into this first game and you're just holding out hope. You're like, okay, let me see 60 minutes. Let's see if this defense can start to figure out and find their way. And right now they haven't. Okay. It is a mishmash bunch that isn't doing the job. Now we go from, are we going to overreact to week one and expect that this is going to be the way it's going to go the rest of the year? Well, you know what? It may be an overreaction, but it also may be accurate.
Yeah.
It could easily be accurate. And that's the thing that I fear most over the next couple of games. And if you go back, and I'm trying to remember the three-game stretch in 11 days, I think it was two seasons ago. Does that sound right?
It was last year.
It was last year when they played Miami. I was thinking it was 2 years ago also where they did do that three games in 11 days. But the bottom line is you will find out, and Urban will find out in a wicked hurry, how tough it is to win in the National Football League if you're swimming upstream and you're playing three games in 11 days.
I think he already found out.
Well, he's already – listen, the current's already pulled him out a little bit, but he will be swimming upstream and he will be flat worn out if he doesn't have an answer quick.
I'm not saying this is you, but this is what we're hearing. You know, overreaction, it's only week one. All right, the Jaguar defense. What have we seen from the Jaguar defense?
Yeah,
go back to the preseason, okay? The starters on the Jacksonville Jaguar defense played the backups for the Cleveland Browns. Played the backups. Case Keenum and guys that aren't playing right now because the regular season has started. And the Browns backups went right down the field on the Jaguar starters. Go the very next week to the Superdome, week two of the preseason. The Jaguar starting defense got absolutely obliterated on national TV by Jameis Winston and by Marquez Callaway for two touchdowns in the first quarter. Now, thankfully, the Jaguar defense proved they belong in the NFL when they stopped the third stringers for Dallas in the third preseason game, and then you see what the Texans do to them on Sunday. So I don't know if it is an overreaction to this point.
No, that's my whole point.
Three out of the four times we've seen this Jaguar defense this year, preseason or regular season, they've been awful.
Yeah,
awful.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, Hack. The one thing I know about the NFL and playing in the league is that when you do have a bad game and you're exposed, it's nothing like the film session when a coach just tears into you, like Tiny Tim on the Christmas ham. He just tears into you, all right? I mean, poor Tiny Tim, but it just flows.
But I would do it to a Christmas ham in a heartbeat.
So it just flows. But what I'm saying is that when you lose a game like you lost to the Texans where you were favored to win, I know that in the film sessions, the coaches are very particular on everything. Effort, technique, getting after, desire, heart, and everything. And they call you out. So if these players have any gumption about themselves, if they're in that film room, and I've been called out before too. I've been called out. And if you got any pride about yourself, you never want to have a repeat performance.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm hoping is that these players recognize their flaws of this past Sunday, go into this game against Denver and play a little better. Not saying they're gonna win, but I'm saying that I just know in particular I've been in film sessions where coaches have, you know, put you under the fire, and then the players do respond to it because they point out effort, they point out technique, they point out getting after it, and I saw none of that on Sunday.
Yeah, this may be the product that we're looking at. We'll find out. All right, we got a short show today, 2 hours. We're going to say hello, hopefully, to Brad Meester. We got Jacob Copeland coming up in a little bit. It's XL Primetime, Beaver Toyota, Beaver Chevrolet on a Tuesday. Look for great deals. Both dealerships rocking and rolling with great deals, and we'll remind you about this will be worth teasing. If your team scores 20 or more, if you're a Gators fan or a Noles fan, you get $20 off your oil change. Let's just do a little quick review from this past weekend. We'll do that coming up.
This football team's not going to quit. And from all the things that have happened and the examples that we get to point back to in this last game, we have to build and get better. And we're going to. And this will be something that we look back to. Nobody wants to have the experience. Nobody wants to have the feelings. but it's our opportunity to respond to it, and it's our opportunity to go get better.
We saved you a seat. It's Lunch with Leon on 1010XL.
Brought to you by Wingstop.
Mike Norvell, coach of the Florida State Seminoles right there, and I'll agree with him on that one last statement. It's their opportunity to get better. There is no question about it. Tuesday's brought to you by Beaver Chevrolet and Beaver Toyota. I mentioned right before the break that Beaver Chevy has this fun promo. It's a little 1010 special. You get $20 off your oil change if your team, if you're Gators fans, Noles fans, your team scores 20 or more, you get 20 off. Jacksonville State scored 20. Florida State scored 17. So, guys are going to have to look forward to that next game. They're, a 5.5-point dog to the Wake Forest?
Which is actually, there's been some big money coming in on Florida State.
That is a shame.
It started at 6.5. It's down to 5.5. I don't know if anybody needs to tell Mike Norvell this, but if he said his team isn't going to quit, maybe he's talking about from this point forward. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, go look at the final play of the game to roughly everybody in your secondary on that 59-yard touchdown. And essentially, they all quit on that play, which is the only reason why Jacksonville State scored and beat you in the first place.
Or the coaches quit by deciding to go ahead and run the cover that they ran.
Well, that too.
Not very good.
When you play in the game, you got to have selective amnesia. That's the only way you're going to save the season. And yeah, and I'm not, you know, when you lose a game like that at home to Jacksonville State, it can ruin the rest of your season. Now, you have to make a decision. Are you going to let that hover over the rest of your season, or are you going to let that go and move on? That's what Norvell's trying to say.
It could also be the turning point.
Yeah, it could be.
And to his point, and you guys might think it's coach speak, but he's right. It's hard work, is what it is.
Yeah.
He's got some heavy lifting to do. So his point is, look, nobody wants to go through the hard work. They just want to see the end product. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of work between now and the end product, and it's going to be bad. It was bad last week. It could be bad this week at Wake Forest. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, the shame of it is that
he's got heavy lifting to do.
The shame of it is that it's damning as far as the job that he's done to this point after such a good effort against Notre Dame. And I do think that's fair criticism, and we will see what the whole finished product looks like, but this is a mammoth game against a team that Florida State should always be better than.
No, there's no doubt in my mind that the criticism is fair. Yeah. When your defensive coordinator calls a man under defense when you've got 59 yards to defend – absolutely, it's fair criticism. He came out after that game and defended his DC when he really should have just said it was inexcusable what we did. Yeah. It was inexcusable the play call that we had, and that's on me and it's on him.
And I appreciate Mike Norvell had to meet the media yesterday. He's got to say something. I mean, what is he going to say? So, I mean, he said everything great, and that all sounds wonderful. But it's going to be a rough year for Florida State. Now, I actually may pick them, Leon, to win. Yeah. On Saturday, because I can't imagine a world where Florida State is 0-3 and two of their losses are to Jacksonville State and Wake Forest. I'm not wired that way. I was born in Tallahassee, saw them in the great glory days of Charlie Ward. No, I'm definitely not that.
I have always liked Florida State basketball.
Thank you, JJ. Florida State you missed out the basketball on that soundbite when I went to the Pat Kennedy basketball camp back in the day. But, yeah. No, I just can't imagine them starting 0-3, so I may pick them because of that and that alone. But what Mike Norvell said yesterday is coach speak to me. That's all it is. What's he going to say?
Well, here's my history of when I was coaching. When we had the brawl with Miami, FIU in Miami, mm-hmm. We came back that next week, and we made practice as hard as we could possibly make it, right? And the guys who couldn't deal with it, we were strict on study hall, curfew, practice, weight room. We didn't let the kids budge on everything. And there's a lot of kids that wanted to rebel against us and stuff like that. We said, well, leave. Just go. It's got to come to a point where Norvell is going to have to emphasize discipline, doing the right things, focus, all that kind of stuff. And the players that don't want to be a part of it, just tell them to leave. Just say, listen, that is embarrassing.
Call them on the carpet.
Just call them to the carpet. Hey, listen, this is how we're going to do
agree
things.
With you. But that roster, I'm not sure you can tell people.
Apparently that happened yesterday. Dante Lucas is no longer with the team. Lucas was a four-star kid at
Maybe
IMG.
You have to reach that point.
Yeah, Dante Lucas was a four-star kid at IMG, chose Florida State over Florida and a couple of others. He had started 14 games the last 2 years. I believe had played, not started, but played in the first two. And I saw on social media, and there's a lot of rumors as to why he is no longer with the team. I won't get into the rumors, but the bottom line is it appears he's no longer with the team. So maybe the vetting process has started. Because after a loss like that, guys are going to jump ship, man. Guys are going to abandon the Titanic.
Listen, you got to tighten your belt. And sometimes you just got to tighten your belt. And if some guys like that, four-star, five-star leave, you got to make sure that you have your guys on board. Whoever's on board for you moving forward after a loss like that, those are the guys you keep. If you lose them 4 stars, you lose them 5 stars, hell, you go next year and recruit some more. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but what if it means you got to play the kid that was on one knee, you know, asking his girlfriend to marry him?
No, he can't go. He
well, that's my point. Like, if you're the four-star guy's got to go, and I agree with what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah.
But I also think you've got to make – it's got to be individual things, because if you desperately need a guy, you know, you might have to, like, compromise your ideals at that point, because – if you need a guy and his backup is the guy on one knee asking his girlfriend to marry him, you got problems, man.
No, you've got to choke him out. No, you got to take all the air out the room. You do. You really do. Because
then you're looking at, you know, 2 and 10.
Now you've got to be selective, but
that's what I was saying.
You can't let half the team go or whatever. But you've got to take out all the air in the room. You can't budge on anything. Curfew, study hall, classes, weight room, film room, all that kind of stuff. Don't budge at all.
And if you lose now, at the very least you're doing it for a reason, or you have a reason with your goal in mind.
I always had the same when I played. I said, you're going to beat me doing it my way. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course. I'm
going to live and die by my technique.
Of course.
You know what I'm saying?
I'm sure he's saying the same
thing.
And there's another thing, too. This is what he has on his side. Let's not forget this. There's no chance in hell Florida State fires him. They're not going through another coaching search. Yeah. They have problems right now with finances, as is in that athletic department. They're not going to fire him again. So to Leon's point, yes, if you're really going to do that and you really think, look, we are going my way or the highway, then take care of it, man. Just set the thing on fire.
And here's the thing, too, for Florida State. I mean, let's be honest. You're 0-2. You lost to a 1-AA team. Your goals for the season, I guess, are still reachable, which is winning a division title in the conference, although that's not going to happen because you're obviously not going to beat Clemson. This isn't so much about wins and losses anymore as it's keeping that recruiting class intact. You got a couple of 5 stars that already committed to you for the class of 2022. You got a lot of 4 stars that are committed to you, some of which went on social media Saturday night and were already not very happy with some of the things that they saw. To my knowledge, I don't think they've had any decommitments yet, but you got to keep that recruiting class intact. So you got to keep your head above water enough to keep that recruiting class intact. What does that mean? 2-10 ain't going to keep that recruiting class intact.
Wait a minute.
You're going to have to win some games.
High school kids go on social medias and tell how they don't like how.
All day. Oh, yeah. All day and all night. All day and all night. All right, real quick. Because
bro,
we got to get.
It ain't your dad's college football.
Yeah,
trust me.
Because we got to get ready for Brad Meester coming up here. Matt, USC gets rid of Clay Helton. Okay. 2 games in. It was an embarrassing loss. To the Cardinals.
Stanford, at home.
All right, how about this? An embarrassing loss to a team that had an embarrassing loss the week earlier.
Stanford lost in Manhattan to Kansas State. Yeah. It's unfortunate because I think if you're firing a guy 2 games into the season, you should have fired him after last season.
True.
Because you're going to give him 2 games to show that he can turn it around. He should have been fired after last season. They didn't do it.
Should have been fired 2 seasons ago.
They didn't do it because they thought, okay, COVID – they were unbeaten in the regular COVID season, then lost in the Pac-12 championship game. You know, can you fire him then at that point? I'm sure there's all of that going on. The reality is you fired him 2 games into this year.
And you know,
now that said, it was the right decision. That's number one. I know our coach, Campo, is good friends with
– yeah, loves Clay.
With Clay. Clay's a good dude, a really good dude. Yeah. But it had to be done. And so now you're looking at who do you get? That's a top three job, easily a top three job. My guess is my first – if I was them and I'm Mike Bone, the first guy I go after is James Franklin at Penn State. Force him to say no to you. And then after that, then I'd go to Mario. Force him to say no. Mario Cristobal at Oregon.
Up, you're saying go and up then, the conference into
yeah,
Oregon.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And then because there's nothing like getting somebody from your own conference hurting a rival in your own conference.
Yeah.
And then if that doesn't work out, then he's probably going to end up going to where he was prior. He was at Cincinnati, the AD prior. And he'll probably end up going to Luke Fickell.
Yeah. The top three betting lines for coaches, Luke Fickell is one, James Franklin is two, Chris Peterson is three, although I saw a report already that Chris Peterson, the former Boise State and Washington coach, has already come out publicly and said he's not interested in returning.
He's not going to do it.
So, but Fickell is the betting favorite with James Franklin just underneath.
And if you are handicapping a guy that is retired and would come out, it's Bob Stoops. Stoops does make some sense.
I don't know.
But the only reason I say this is because Stoops did do a little XFL before, like he came back out of retirement just to kind of scratch that football itch.
Yeah.
Possible.
Let's put everybody's mind at ease here locally. You are going to hear things, and I've already seen them. Would Urban bail on Jacksonville for the USC job? Matt Hayes, your thoughts?
No, but
the hesitation there.
The only reason I'm hesitation is because number one, anything's possible with him. That's number one. And number two, I think had it been open after last season, had both these jobs been open at the same time, both the Jags and USC, that would have been a difficult decision for him.
Yeah. All right. So we'll definitely keep that topic out there. You can hit the text line designed by Lifetime Enclosures, 641-1010. Your thoughts on that job, your thoughts on what's cooking here, and we'll say hello to Brad Meester coming up next.
We saved you a seat. It's Lunch with Leon on 1010XL.
Brought to you by Wingstop.
17 minutes in front of the 1 o'clock hour, XL primetime. Joe C., Big Cerse, Hack, Matty Hayes. Check out his stuff at SaturdayDownSouth.com. And we've got another lineman on with us right now, one of the Jaguar greats, the longest-serving Jacksonville Jaguar, one Brad Meester, who joins us now. Welcome in, Brad. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Hey, man, no doubt. We appreciate your time. We like to have this feature that we're trying to crank up, big games, big names, and so we were fired up to have you week one, but then the game wasn't as big as we needed it to be. I was expecting a win, Brad. What did you think with what you saw?
I was in the same boat as you guys. I mean, I was expecting a win. I hate to say it, at least a competitive game. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It was just, I guess for me, it was just hard to watch. I guess it was probably that way for about everybody. I mean, that's not quite what we thought would happen. I knew that we were, and I've said this to a lot of people because I'm all around here bragging up the Jaguars all summer. But I've told them that, you know, we will have some growing pains. It's going to take us a little while, but they're just like everybody else. It was hard to watch. I mean, I don't want to say it was embarrassing, but there were parts of it I wish, you know, were better. So,
Brad, obviously the amount of football you've played in your career, you know this better than most. Three illegal formations, one 12-man in the huddle illegal substitution issue. People are saying, is that coaching? Is that lack of focus? Were they not prepared? How do things like that happen for an NFL team?
That's a great question. That's the part, you know, that I put in there as like the embarrassing part. I mean, those are things. Listen, obviously, in opening week, I mean, things aren't going to go perfect. I mean, it's just the way opening week is. But those are things that can be controlled. You know, I mean, those are things that, you know, shouldn't happen, especially the illegal formations. I mean, obviously, you know, our tackles, I don't know who it was, but were too far back. I mean, they don't just call that on the first time either. Obviously, they always warn before they penalize. So it happens several times. Those are things that should have been corrected. I mean, those are simple things. And that's the hard part. I mean, those are the parts that are, you know, glaring when you look at it, you know, just for me. And, you know, some of the beginning of the game is blaring a little bit for me too. I mean, I guess actually as an offensive lineman, I wish we would have ran the ball early. I think we just didn't run the ball like we should have. I know we got Trevor back there and he's a heck of a quarterback, but for an opening game, I think, you know, to break a kid in, run the ball. I mean, that's just my thought. I guess maybe I'm biased because I'm a lineman.
No, you're not biased. You're not biased, Brad. You're absolutely on point, bro. Hey, bro, that was the most disheartening thing for me watching that game, is because the strength of this team is collectively the offensive line that's been together over the last couple of years, and you didn't utilize them properly. I mean, when you got a 1,000-yard rusher in Robertson and you got an offensive line that's played for 2 years, I think the offensive coordinator, Bevel, just got cute and wanted to play with this toy that was Trevor instead of using the offensive line in the running game from the start.
I don't disagree. I mean, I really feel like our offensive line can pass block. They can. But we're probably really built to run block. I mean, we're a run-blocking team, and we have the backs to run the ball. And I just always felt, I realized, like I said, he can throw it, but in preseason games, you know, we could say, well, there was three preseason games, but preseason and regular season are different. The speed changes. It's faster. I mean, I remember my first game. It was like a blur how fast it goes. It really does. So I think for a kid like that, I mean, just to break him in, you have to run the ball at the beginning to start that game. I don't know. I mean, I'm not in that locker room or in the meeting rooms or, you know, what the reasoning was, but I guess just, and I hate saying stuff. I mean, it's hard to, you know, it's always hard to, it's easy to say stuff after the game. It's always easy to second guess it after it doesn't work. But I just wasn't certain on it. You know what I mean? I thought we would run the ball early and we didn't.
So Brad, I thought you said something really intriguing earlier when you said officials typically will warn linemen when they're not lined up on the line. So they at least get a warning. So now you've got the warning and you've got three incidents of it. So in your opinion, is that on the player or on the coach or on both? At what point does it sink in?
It's got to be on both. I mean, I mean, they're not rookie linemen. I mean, they know. I mean, I'm almost certain, unless it was different then or different now, but they always warn them first. You know, I mean, hey, you got to move up. You're too far off the ball. And it's usually said to the entire group. I mean, it never affected me, obviously, but I know that I've heard it several times get said to the entire group. So I guarantee they had to have gotten warned before they were penalized, and then to let it happen again, you know, that's just not. I mean, you can't let that happen. I mean, if you get busted for it once, I mean, you're going to make a conscious effort to make sure you're on the line. So I think that was just lack of focus on our part, and that's something we can't let happen.
Now, Brad, my history of that, because I played tackle, is it's usually the opposing team that tells the referee, "Hey, that tackle's a little far back," is that your history? I know that just happened.
I think so. I mean, usually those with the defensive line that complains about it. But I know that the refs always say something to the line. I don't know that there's many times where it just gets called right away. It's usually if they complain about it, then something gets said to the line. And then, you know, if it happens again, they're going to throw it. And they threw it twice. So I don't know. That's my theory. I mean, I've always heard it that way. You know, I mean, it's never gets said to me. But I know I hear warnings get thrown all the time. So,
a couple more for Brad Meester, longtime center, the most tenured Jaguar, with us on XL Primetime. And I think coming out of game one for Urban Meyer as a first ever NFL head coach, very successful in the college game, but first ever NFL game, what do you think is swimming through his football brain right now? How can he bounce back from what looked like a very poor overall performance?
I mean, I don't know that there's like I said, there will be growing pains. I don't know that there's a complete overhaul. I think it's just focusing on the small details. Mm-hmm. And I know that he probably preaches that and those little things, and maybe it was just nerves. I don't know what it was. But literally just focusing on the little thing. I think if you avoid the little mistakes, obviously the penalties were huge, you know what I mean? But there's just little other things that, you know, drop balls. And then obviously we talked about not running the ball. But I think the big thing to take from it is that everything that happened there is correctable. Not, you know, this ain't end of the season, like end of the, you know. We have it's a great team. There's a really good team. And Trevor's going to be unbelievable. We just got to, you know, they just have to correct those little things and turn it around.
Brad, as a former offensive player, when you start a game – and you see your defense is struggling. And let's be honest, the Jaguar defense struggled in the first half, the second half. It was not a good Sunday afternoon on the defensive side of the ball. I thought the offense pressed a little bit. That's why they had 51 passes compared to only 16 runs, although I agree with you. I think that was ridiculous. You should have ran the ball more even though you were trailing. But how much of the interception issue for Trevor on Sunday, the play calling, the entire offensive scheme – how much was that affected because your defense, quite frankly, wasn't stopping anybody?
Well, I mean, it gets hard when you get behind, especially when you get behind early. You know what I mean? You do tend to press a little bit. I mean, you know you got to start scoring. You got to start doing something. But I don't think there was any reason to rush. I mean, there was so much of the game left. You know what I mean? I think we just went to slinging it all over the place, trying to get back as quick as we can, there's a lot of game left. We have plenty of time to come back. But I think if we just stuck to what we do, you know, I mean, it got comfortable. I mean, just on some of the throws, I mean, I'm not a quarterback, but he just didn't look comfortable. They were just slightly off, you know what I mean? And I think some of that was just that situation we put him in. You know, I mean, we put him in a tough spot. We got behind early, and we started throwing a lot. I think some of that could have been avoided. Obviously, if we keep talking about it, we ran the ball. But, you know, if we just didn't press so early that he had to start slinging it everywhere.
Well, we'll hope for better stuff. It's going to be a tough stretch, 3 games in 11 days, and you know that ain't easy. But hopefully we'll catch up with you now. Are you coaching in the high school game?
Yes, I am.
Are you an OC this year?
Well, yeah, I do all the run game stuff. So myself and another coach kind of put the game plan together. So I call out most of the run stuff, and he helps me with some of the pass stuff. So we do it together.
Are we scoring?
Yeah, we're scoring. We score about 40 points a game. So
nice.
We're doing all right so far. So far, so good.
I like hearing that. All right, man, appreciate it. We'll definitely catch up with you, and hopefully we got something good to talk about real soon.
All right, sounds good.
Thanks, Brad.
Brad Meester. Now, Brad's a northern Iowa guy, mm-hmm. but I imagine in that state right now, the Hawkeye fans are on cloud nine with what's going on in the state of Iowa with Kirk Ferentz and the Hawkeyes have done so
Give
far.
Give him credit. My college football playoff, 1/4 of it's blown
mine
up.
Mine too. Let's think about this. This is amazing.
And they can knock off Oklahoma, but I put two Big 12 teams in there.
This is truly amazing. And to his point of, they typically will warn players, hey, man, you're not lined up right.
Yeah.
So that's four times they did it, at least.
Well, apparently, and I didn't hear this, but Loggeman, apparently, on Jaguars Today, said that there was a potential with the DJ Chark touchdown, the 41-yarder, that they could have called that.
Yeah, I didn't see
as
that.
An illegal formation. Yeah. They didn't.
Go back and look.
I'd have to go back and look, too. Yeah. And, again, I just had somebody.
That's dreadful.
It's usually opposing team. The coach is always looking at the alignment, especially if his defense is not getting to the quarterback. So he's saying that the tackle's cheating back a little bit. So the coach of the opposing team will go to the ref and say, hey, listen, you know, Searcy's a little too far back. That's the reason why DeAnn can't.
Right, but shouldn't George Warhop be looking at his guys saying, hey, you're off the line of scrimmage. You've already cost us one play.
If you're a lineman, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. So
we try to, especially on the road. I know that's why you asked Brad that question,
especially
too.
Especially on the road, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying.
You had that little smile on your face. I know that's why you're asking.
I told
that
you
question,
guys in the pre-show coming out of the weekend, I'm starting to worry it all goes back to George Warhop. I'm just a little worried about that. I'm just a little concerned.
At the end of the day, they're getting paid to play this game.
Yeah.
They're grown men. You've been told to get on the line of scrimmage. Get on the line of scrimmage.
I know. We'll find out if the game plan changes if they run the ball more. All right, so let's get into the 1 o'clock hour. Even though what we saw was primarily bad, let's talk about some of the good that we saw in the NFL, some of the good that we saw in the college game. We'll do all that coming up. Beaver Chevrolet, Beaver Toyota, they bring you today's show. You can shop online, see the unbelievable lineup of cars, SUVs, trucks, you name it. They've got it, Toyota and Chevy. And don't forget, Beaver Chevy, Noles fans, Gators fans. Your team scores 20 or more, you get to take 20 off an oil change. All you got to do is roll in there and say, hey, I want that 10-10 special. 10 plus 10, that's 20 off at Beaver Chevrolet.
We saved you a seat. It's Lunch with Leon on 1010XL.
Brought to you by Wingstop.
1 o'clock hour is here. Denver is going to be here before you know it. The Broncos, under the direction of Teddy Bridgewater, coming up with a win over the New York Football Giants. They went up to the Big Apple or to Jersey, the Meadowlands, and now they're coming to Duval next. So we'll have the Broncos in town. Back-to-back home games for your Jacksonville Jaguars. And right here on the flagship home, you're going to have a chance to win tickets, and you got all sorts of things to look forward to. But more than anything else, you want to see a good product on the field. So we thought we would say hello to an old friend, a guy that knows this team very well, still probably pays attention to him from afar, but now covers the Denver Broncos for the Denver Post. His name? You already know it out there, don't you? Ryan O'Halloran. Welcome in, Ryan.
Fellas, how are we doing today?
We're doing great, man. We're doing great, considering. How about that? How about we start with your observation of Urban Meyer's debut as an NFL head coach before we get to your Broncos?
That was pathetic. I watched the game a little bit last night, watched it this morning. you know, when you have 12 guys in the huddle, when you can't line up right, you don't really have a chance. And when you can't stop the run, you don't have a chance. When you can't rush the passer, same thing. So I thought it was a total debacle. And yeah, I'm sure they felt pretty confident going in, saying, oh, Houston's got 50 new players and blah, blah, blah. Tyrod Taylor's still a serviceable quarterback. He knows how to get his team in and out of the right play. He knows how to make things when he gets out of the pocket. So, you know, interesting day, I imagine, inside the Jaguars' offices with the top question being, what do we do now?
It'll be a big moment on Sunday when Ryan O'Halloran makes his return to Jacksonville. Ryan, you're coming with a team that got a pretty big win opening day, a dominating effort. Teddy Bridgewater for the Denver Broncos was in that quarterback competition. My goodness, 264 yards, two touchdowns, no picks. Melvin Gordon, 100 yards. I mean, as far as Denver goes, I imagine opening day against New York went about as well as they could have hoped for.
Yeah, pretty thorough hack. I think the only thing was losing Jerry Jeudy with the high ankle. That's sort of the only blemish on that day. You know, this team needed some good stuff earlier. They started 0-4 2 years ago. They started 0-3 last year. And they came out. They pitched around the yard. They had struggled running it. I mean, Melvin, 70 of those yards came on one carry, a touchdown at the end. But what they did do is they stopped the run. I mean, Saquon Barkley is obviously not back to 100%, but they were able to get Daniel Jones some third and medium, third and long. They were able to get off the field that way. And then Teddy was lights out. He stretched the field a little bit on intermediate passes, let his guys do some things after the catch. You know, like six guys had at least three catches, so it makes it tough to defend when you have that many options.
So, Ryan, you spoke about how with this team here, they got to be asking what now. I'm interested with the Broncos, and because of those slow starts the last couple of years, you get out now, you have a great game, played really well, quarterback looks like he's a guy that can win games for them. What do you think in their mindset, thinking mostly mentally right now, the general manager, the coach, the guys in the front office, what are they thinking right now about this team? Is it better than what they initially thought, you think?
They were pretty confident throughout the preseason that they had made some additions on defense, and then they felt good about Teddy once they named him the starter. So you look at their schedule at the Jags and then home to the Jets. You got to be 3-0 because then the schedule really starts to get tough. You go 500 over the last 14 games, you're going to make the playoffs. So I think it's going to be keep the pedal down and go into Jacksonville and say, hey, they had trouble blocking a four-man rush against the Texans. Vic Fangio has had a ton of success in his career against rookie quarterbacks. Get a lead like you did last week and then lean on Von Miller and your secondary to keep the other team in check and make them one-dimensional. That plays right in your hands if they have to throw it all the time.
Yeah, Ryan, I wanted to piggyback off of what you were just talking about as far as Fangio going up against rookie quarterbacks. Now, last week you went up against Daniel Jones. I like to think Trevor's a little bit better than Daniel Jones with his IQ and his arm. But do you think that'll be the same approach that y'all had against the Giants that you have against the Jaguars next week?
Yeah, tough to tell. I mean, he rushed five or more on only 8 of 43 dropbacks. So his thing is basically going to play coverage. Do you take a page from Houston's playbook where Lovie just rushed four, which is what his MO is? I'm sure he mixed some things up on the back end. But one of Dick's hallmarks is he disguises those safeties, sort of baits you, then tricks you into throwing passes in the areas that you shouldn't. So my guess is they probably want to test them a little bit with pressure and also coverage because there's just there's a little bit of an unknown since you haven't faced them before. But, I think Von Miller, he looked great last week. If you get Bradley Chubb back from that ankle injury, they should feel confident that with a four-man rush, they should be able to get the advantage against that Jaguar offensive line.
We're talking with Ryan O'Halloran. You can definitely check him out on social media, of course, Denver Post, as he covers the Denver Broncos and all things NFL. When you think about is it a revival for Von Miller in a lot of ways? Because he has to be thinking, injuries have gotten him a little bit. Vic Fangio's kind of like they're wondering whether he's the right guy or not. This is an important year for Von Miller, is it not?
It is. Last year of his contract. And, impression I get is that being a one-team player is very important to Von. And, he's going to be a Ring of Famer in the Broncos when he retires, even if he finishes his career somewhere else. But it just feels like that's an emphasis for him. And he doesn't have Hall of Fame numbers just yet, but he needs a couple more good years to get to that point. So this year it's about, hey, staying healthy after missing all last year. Can you get back to 10, 11, 12 sacks? Show the Broncos that you are worth a 3 or 4 year contract to finish your career here. Or the flip side being, if this season doesn't go well, but you have good numbers, go chase a championship somewhere else. So I do think there's a sense of urgency for Vaughn. And I think so with Vic Fangio as well. And, you know, with a veteran team a little bit on defense, he sort of zigged a little bit. You know, he played his starters a little bit in the preseason, including 21 snaps in the last game. I think that crispness made a difference in the opener.
Ryan, I want to swing back to what you said about the Jaguars at the beginning of the conversation. You've covered the league for a long time. One of the reasons I really enjoy having you on is you'll quite frankly speak your mind. You don't hold back. You called it a pathetic performance by the Jaguars on Sunday. I can't really say that I disagree with you all that much. I mean, but all the mistakes that you saw, are things like that correctable in 7 days? Or when the Denver Broncos are here on Sunday, I mean, it's a quick turnaround for the Jaguars to correct a lot of flaws that we saw in the opener.
Yeah, I mean, this, you know, I think it is possible on offense. I thought Trevor made some great throws, and he looked like he you knew how to manage the huddle, get himself out of harm's way. You know, but you got to catch the football, and his numbers would have been a lot better if they didn't have some of those drops. One thing I would do is I'd give him at least a 6 pass protector, keep that tight end in, even if it's a 4-man rush, because you do not want him on the run all the time. You do not want him getting hit a lot, even though he only got sacked one time. So on defense is, okay, what do you want to be? I mean, they're rushing 3 guys. They rush 2 guys on a 3rd down. They're rushing 6 guys. You know, what is their identity? Who can they rely on? And right now, I don't see a lot of those players on that defense that you can say, okay, you know that guy's going to play well. So I almost think more of their problem is on defense this week and figuring out, okay, who are the right players to play? And what's the right pass rush plan to throw out the Broncos?
Yeah, good stuff. You don't want your identity to be can't stop anything and we throw the ball too much. That's for sure. All right, so you're flying in Saturday?
No, flying in Friday. I got some meetings or dinners and lunches and breakfasts planned. So I haven't been to a game there since the Buffalo playoff game.
Okay.
So. Nice. Looking forward to getting back to town, and it should be a fun weekend. And you know, the game usually gets in the way, which is what will happen in this case.
Well, you're a dignitary, so if you make it in time for the show, drop by. We'd love to see you.
Well, I think it's Friday night because flying on mountain time because they practice. Your team is flying in Friday night too, which is pretty rare for them. So, okay. But I think it'd be an interesting game. It'd be interesting to see what the crowd is, and it's. Urban Meyer started off to an interesting beginning. It'll be interesting to see how he reacts this week to some of the pressure that's on.
It's the truth, man. It's the truth. Ryan, we appreciate it, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, fellas. Take care now.
All
thanks.
Right, we'll see you over there. Ryan O'Haller from the Denver Post.
That just happened. Brought to you by Florida Home AC, the official air conditioning partner of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
All right, so Adam Schefter of ESPN. This is also from Pro Football Talk as well. They're reporting that a total of 8 people within the New Orleans Saints organization have tested positive for COVID. 6 offensive coaches plus 1 player plus 1 nutritionist will enter the COVID protocol. 6 offensive coaches. It's Tuesday. The Saints obviously play again in 5 days. It could get worse come Wednesday, the story goes. The weekly testing protocol for vaccinated players and staff requires the test to be divided over 3 days. More positives could potentially come back on Wednesday. If the vaccinated players or staff who test positive can return, they can't return until generating negative tests at least 24 hours apart. Unvaccinated players have to have a minimum absence of 10 days. So, again, 6 offensive coaches from the Saints. We don't know who.
Right. That's it.
Could be anybody.
Yeah. From a game planning point of view, it's definitely going to hurt them. But just from a personnel point of view, that's good news as far as the numbers are concerned. So
maybe there was something in that paint, you know, on the field hack.
Maybe Duval.
Well, it didn't seem to bother him too much in a 38-3 trouncing over Green Bay.
Maybe Duval wasn't as welcoming as we thought we would be. Who knows? Who knows? It's XL primed.
Bet you didn't know. Brought to you by Travis Cummings and the Bailey Group.
My man Travis Cummings, he can take care of you in the spots that are running right now. It shows how he's working with a lot of businesses, organizations all over the First Coast. He can help your employees get the best benefits that they could possibly have. He will take care of you. It's a simple phone call away for HR managers, business owners, general managers. If you're a medium or large business, just write down 461-1800 for the Bailey Group. 461-1800, and make sure you ask for Travis Cummings, and he'll set you up with the best benefits out there. All right, fellas, we just talked to Ryan O'Halloran, and the Denver Broncos are going to be rolling in. The team after that is going to be rolling in with one Kyler Murray. He now has four career games with at least three touchdown passes and one rushing touchdown. That ties him with two other cats for the most such games by a player in his first three seasons in NFL history. Who are the other two? Four career games with at least three touchdown passes and one rushing touchdown.
Lamar Jackson. Wilson?
Cam, Lamar.
See, I don't think it'd be Cam because Cam was yesterday, unless he wants to go back-to-back days, which would be odd.
You think I'd go to the well more than once with Cam?
I don't know if he'd go back-to-back with Cam.
That's a good read, Hack. I'm just going to give you a little tip there. Russ, that's a good read.
Russ with and Mike Vick.
I'm going to go Mike Vick, and I'm going to go Steve McNair.
I like Steve McNair. That's pretty good.
A little old school there. Okay.
Lamar played last night. Keep that in mind.
Yeah. Lost, I'm going to go with Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, but he could have seen it last night.
Yeah, I'm going to change up. I'm going with Russ and Lamar Jackson. Because I think JJ's right.
I'm going to go with Lamar Jackson and Russell Wilson.
All right, who'd you go with?
No, I think they're probably right, but I'm going to stick with Vic and Steve McNair.
Those are all good guesses, but none of them have hit the mark.
Wow.
None have hit the mark. And I'll tell you, one is old school.
Oh,
one is old school.
One.
Old school.
I got one.
All right.
Steve Young?
Nope.
Fran Tarkenton?
Nope. But I would put you in that era, maybe even before
Robin
that.
Douglas.
The other one is a current player.
Wow.
Josh Allen.
Josh Allen.
There you go. Ding for the Josh Allen. Ding for Josh Allen. The other one you probably won't get, so we'll just throw it out there. A politician as well. One Jack Kemp. And so both of them wore Bills colors back in the day, or current and back in the day. That's it. Short amount of time to go for three touchdowns and one rushing in one game four different times. That's pretty good.
By the way, and maybe I'm overthinking this here. We talked about the Saints and their COVID issues. They played at TIAA Bank Field.
No, you're not overthinking this
on Sunday. So I don't know the cleaning crew situation down there in the locker room and the coach's box and the sideline because the Saints were the home team. But apparently eight Saints personnel, including six offensive coaches, have tested positive for COVID.
Should we wipe down
morning.
The grocery bags?
I think you definitely need to do a fall cleanse of TIAA Bank Field prior to Sunday.
Yeah, you're not overthinking that at all. I guarantee you. What does Matt walk around with, JJ? The Clorox?
The Clorox wipes, yeah.
Even remember, though we know for a fact it doesn't travel safe through surfaces, but, you know.
Although we looked at,
be
remember,
safe.
Remember way back when we looked at the ingredients and Leon had a stock tip from a guy that said.
Yeah, he told me about 2 years ago. He said black Clorox.
Because that one protects against coronavirus.
Yeah. It's right there in the box. Yeah,
they're probably all holstering Clorox wipes right now. All right, now we're going to get ready for Jacob Copeland, Florida Gator. We're going to say hello to him. Big Sirs, you are out the door.
Howdy.
Enjoy your afternoon, man.
All right, fellas.
All right, we will talk to you mañana. We have a short show. We're off at 2. The French show coming up then. But we will get ready to say hello to one of the guys who's expected to make plays if they're going to have a chance against Bama, and that is one of their star wide receivers.
This is XL Primetime, protected by Preferred Roofing on 1010XL.
One of the biggest games in the swamp in, say, a long time. Yeah, that's fair. Florida v. Alabama. You'll hear it right here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM, as we say hello to one of the guys that hopes to be a big part in the orange and blue. His name is Jacob Copeland, wide receiver for the Gators. He joins us now. Jacob, welcome in. How are you?
I'm good.
Hey, man, we appreciate your time. How big is the feeling in the locker room for this type of game, Florida versus Alabama? Paint a picture for us as far as what's going through you and other players' minds.
It's most definitely going to be a big thing, a big opportunity, and everybody on this team is excited about this week, coming into the week and all that. Everyone been doing well at practice so far as the week going through. But most of all, everyone is excited and ready for this game to pop off. But it's a lot of great energy that's going on around the locker room and on the field.
Jacob, what about for you personally? I remember following the recruiting process. It was very hot and heavy between Florida and Alabama for you. You now have a shot at them in the swamp on Saturday as you're now a gigantic part of what the Gators are doing on offense. I would think the motivation for you is pretty big going into Saturday's game.
My main focus is stay focused. And, whenever my number is called, it's to make the plays that my team, my coaches believe in me to do. So all I have to say is staying focused is the main key.
So, Jacob, the big talk around college football now is Anthony Richardson. That throw he made to you where he threw across his body after rolling out, I mean, he literally put that thing right where only you could catch it. Talk about Anthony and what he brings to the team, his unique skill set.
Anthony's a great quarterback, very talented. Thing that he brings that a lot of people around the country probably can't bring is the excitement to every game. And, but the most thing of all, him and Emory are quite the same quarterbacks. They can do the same thing, same set. Anything that you put in on, Emory can do the same thing as well. And a lot of people just saying, speaking of Ant, but both quarterbacks are great to me.
And I think as a teammate, you got to look at it that way because right now you're not quite sure what's going to happen with the hamstring of Anthony Richardson. And Emory, certainly, the more reps, the more big plays you'll see. We're talking with Jacob Copeland, wide receiver for the Florida Gators. You know, Anthony Richardson, it seems like every time he touches the ball, he's made plays. But, heck, you have a half dozen catches, and twice you've been in the end zone. So are you saying, hey, feed me a little bit more to either one of those guys?
Either one. But they're both great quarterbacks at the same time. So, and I want – and they're my brothers at all times. So it's nothing against one of them. It's nothing – both of them, I feel, are the great quarterbacks. It just – it is what it is at the same time, but both QBs are great.
Jacob, you guys put 46 points on Alabama in the SEC title game last year. Obviously, you were scoring at will almost that night in Atlanta. Can you take anything away from that game 9 months ago to use going into this game? Is there anything from that game, you know, tendencies, anything along those lines you can use in preparation for Saturday?
Just losing by 6 points. Taking that to the chin, knowing we was that close, they executed more than us. But now, time is here. We feel like we're in a good position. Hopefully, we come out with a W.
You guys hear what's being said, you know, outside the locker room about, you know, no one's beating Alabama. You know, there's no way Florida's got a chance against Alabama. Do you guys use that as fuel inside the locker room?
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. Like, everything that comes out is, Florida's not this. Florida's not this good this year. Florida's not this and that. We don't too much care for that. We know what we got as a team, what we do, what we bring to the table. As long as we stick together and execute well throughout the rest of this week and come to Saturday, I feel like we'll be just fine.
Couple more for Jacob Copeland, wide receiver for the Florida Gators. You'll hear Florida versus Alabama right here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM on Saturday. Go into the wide receiver room, and for that matter, the skill players on the offense, Jacob, and give us an idea of, like, have you guys set a goal collectively to kind of match the unbelievable play that Florida had offensively last year? Has that kind of been one of the big goals for you guys?
We most definitely lost some great players. I feel like we still have some great players that a lot of people haven't seen yet. So I feel like as a whole, we compete with each other to bring the best out of each other. So with that being said, we just gonna come out there and play our game as a team and do what we gotta do out there on the field this Saturday.
Jacob, there's no question you're one of the leaders on this team, certainly one of the leaders on that offense. But as a guy that's played a lot of games in a Gator uniform, there weren't fans in the stands last year. And you know, the Florida Atlantic game, it was what it was. It was nice, but it was Florida and Florida Atlantic. I mean, it's Florida and Alabama this Saturday in the swamp. National TV, 90-plus thousand in that stadium screaming their heads off for you guys. I mean, how excited are you and your teammates about turning the swamp back into the swamp? Because there hasn't been an environment in Gainesville like that, like we're going to see on Saturday in a couple of years.
It's going to be a great, exciting thing, knowing that we got 90K plus back in the stadium. Last year we didn't have much, but knowing we got our fans backing us up, and we feel like we're going to come out of SQ well and back them up as well as a team and just staying focused at the all times. It's just going to be a great feeling, though, to be back out there in the swamp in front of 90K plus, in front of a great team opponent.
So, Jacob, you being one of the leaders on the team, how important is this week of practice? We always hear Dan Mullen and other coaches say, you practice how you play on Saturday. How important is it for you guys this week?
It's very important. Knowing we can't make too many mistakes. You can't let that happen during this week because we know Alabama is a great team. We know that they capitalize off mistakes. So we're just focusing on that, the little things, the things like that, and staying focused. But most of all, we just got to stick with each other at all times. Like no matter what, like if we feeling like things not going too well at the moment, but we just all got to stick to it and keep our head in the game.
All right, Jacob. Before you go, let these North Florida Gators know that you're gonna be ready Saturday afternoon. They need to be ready. Can you give them a little go, Gators? Try and fire them up just for a quick second.
Everyone tune in 3:30 live Saturday afternoon. And after that, go Gators.
All right, Jacob. Thank you very much, buddy. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jacob.
Good stuff there from Jacob Copeland. Again, he got awarded the number one jersey. That's a big deal for Dan Mullen and his staff giving out the number one there at the University of Florida. We saw Kadarius Toney with it last year. Now Jacob Copeland got that jersey this year.
Two scores, five catches, 175 yards.
Yeah. I mean,
that was made. Now, again, against South Florida, but if you look at Alabama and you're trying to figure out, are there weak links? The answer pretty much is no, okay? No. But you definitely have to look at the big play possibility, which is what Florida had last time,
They have issues in the secondary, Alabama does.
And honestly, if you're going to find a weak link, that might be it, and Florida's going to obviously take their chances. They haven't necessarily shown everything offensively that they've got.
I don't think they've shown anything. I mean, I think you look at Copeland.
Tight end hadn't caught a pass yet, has he?
No. That's another thing. It's not just a tight end. I think Whittemore's going to be a factor in this game as well.
Yeah, he showed up this past week, too.
I also think that you look at Copeland, man, he has changed his body in the last year. Mm-hmm. He's now a legit guy that's a big dude that can run. So I expect him to have a big season.
Yeah. I'll never forget. There have been some classic signing day moments. One of the more classic ones was Jacob Copeland, but do you remember when he's on TV, mother walked off the set
because
she wanted him to go to Alabama?
We were doing the show, and I do remember,
it was a surprise because I thought he was going to Alabama because I had talked to him probably 2 or 3 weeks prior, and all the indicators were that he was going to Bama. He goes to Florida on signing day, and boy, mama wasn't happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and look, there's
a natty.
What's that?
He'd already have a natty.
He would.
True, but there have been a few mamas that have gotten mad and walked off of sets either because they weren't going to Alabama or because they were going to Alabama. Remember Collins way back when?
Yeah.
His mom was all sorts of fired up down in Louisiana.
But you think about Copeland. Talk about waiting your turn. We talk so much about Emory because that's the big story. Copeland had to wait out Freddie Swain, Josh Hammond, Van Jefferson, and Tyree Cleveland. Then he had to wait out Trevon Grimes, Kadarius Toney. And now he's probably the guy. When you think of this Gator offense, you think of him. Shorter hasn't gotten near as involved as I thought he would.
He's not as polished as Copeland. Copeland is clearly the guy in that
receiver. I'll tell you a guy that'll be Copeland next year is Xavier Henderson. That dude's going to be a beast. Give him another year or so. He's pretty good now.
He's a five-star guy. He's a guy that should have actually started playing last year.
Well, Copeland was a five-star guy on some recruiting boards.
And give Wells a little credit here locally, okay,
for a guy that has worked hard to get on the field.
Yeah, he's worked hard. He stepped up. Talk about adding, and you can give Nick Savage a lot of credit here, okay, as far as what happens in the weight room and getting these guys. This is the whole thing. It doesn't matter what program you're talking about. If they are to succeed, it's that next guy. It's not like if one guy gets injured, it's the next guy up necessarily, because that's kind of hard to do sometimes. But that next year, it is that next guy up. And that's what has to happen from the Van Jefferson to the Kadarius Toney to the Jacob Copeland to the Xavier Henderson, whomever it might be. And that's basically what they're trying to build there.
You know, and again, this is kind of an opinion question, so I'm not sure if there's a correct answer to this or not. But I'm trying to go back through the memory banks. A top 15 Gator team, not one of the 4-8 teams that were terrible, but a top 15 Gator team playing at home in the swamp, national TV. When's the last time in that scenario they're playing a team where basically there is not one shot given to them of winning this game.
Yeah, very few people are giving them a shot.
Very, very few are even giving them a chance to keep it close.
Honestly, the first one that comes to mind, and this may be it, there may have been one since then, but the 97 game against a number one Florida State Seminole team.
Yeah, that's a good comparison.
And I want to say Florida was 12, 13, 14, yeah, something like
that.
They
were 8-2 going into that game.
Yeah, something like that in the ranks. They were just outside of the top 10, and it was one of the more thrilling games I've ever seen in my life.
The one thing they have going for them is Bryce Young has not played a true road game yet.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to help a little bit. If that place is crazy and it's loud, that will help some. The other thing they got going for them is I'm not sold on the Alabama offensive line just yet, and I'm really not sold
Zach
on the Alabama
Carter
secondary.
Yeah.
I'm sold on Evan Neal.
Yeah, and Dexter and those guys.
I mean, and look,
Evan Neal's a monster.
We are literally nitpicking right now with Alabama because they're the best team.
Yes.
Well, all I'm saying is if you get in that crazy environment and it's loud and he makes a couple mistakes and the little momentum happens, then guys suddenly start playing at their ceiling.
Yeah,
all of them. Everybody on the field does.
Yeah,
what I need Robinson, the running back. I need Bryce Young, the quarterback, and I need
minimum
Anderson, the defensive end, to get targeting penalties. Like 5 minutes into the game,
did you see the kicker
got the
who got a targeting penalty?
The targeting
so what I need, I need Bryce Young. I need Bryce Young to throw a pick.
I think he was getting ready to say injured, so I said
no. I wasn't.
I think you might have shifted him.
I would never wish injury on a collegiate athlete. But what I will wish is that Bryce Young throws a pick to Trey Dean. Trading's running it back, and Bryce Young gets targeting.
Yeah, there you go.
And gets thrown out of the game. And maybe Robinson gets targeting on the same exact play. Then we can talk about maybe the upset.
Yeah, this will be a trivia question later. The first quarterback ever to be thrown out of a game,
yeah,
maybe targeting.
That'd be fantastic.
Yeah, and you're talking about signature moments, and Alabama has a book of them. Other teams have chapters that's kind of maybe growing into a little mini novel.
They don't lose these games. They eat up these games.
Yeah, there are other teams that they haven't had those in a while. And it's not like Florida hasn't had a bunch of those. But it's been a minute, and that's what they need.
Been a long minute.
Yeah, and they need Oregon going into Ohio State and knocking them off and probably shocking a few people out there. I always root for Oregon. I like Mario Cristobal, and I certainly took the points, but I did not know whether they would win game.
I don't see this as being an Alabama route. You know what I see this as, honestly?
This is a close game.
I see this a lot like Florida going into LSU in 2019 and playing really well, but not having enough at the end of the day to get to win it.
It ended up being a 14.
It was 42-28.
Well, the pick in the end zone was what ended the game.
But it was a hell of a game.
Hell of a game.
And both teams match scores. They
were up 28-21 at one point.
Right for the here and now, I don't know that Florida can match scores with anybody.
Not with Emory Jones at quarterback.
Right.
Anthony Richardson, I don't think, is going
to
play.
I talked to my diamond dude, and I'm like, if Anthony Richardson plays, they have a chance to win. If he doesn't, they don't. And that's basically the way I'm looking at this game right now.
I told you yesterday, and I guess
that's more than fair.
Matt said the same thing. We wouldn't play him. Right, I'm not playing Anthony Richardson against Alabama so that I can play him in December against Alabama.
But I've already told you, it really is, and I love the enthusiasm and the optimism, but that's a little presumptuous. And
why is that?
To assume that
I mean, you have to get through Georgia, obviously.
Yeah.
I'm not saying
– right.
Well, of course, I thought that went without saying.
Yeah.
But if you rest Anthony Richardson this week, then Anthony Richardson is healthy.
Yeah.
To play LSU and Georgia. Right. My point is, if you play Anthony Richardson 75% and the hamstring gets even worse, then maybe he doesn't
totally
play against LSU.
Right.
Maybe he doesn't play Georgia, and then you have no prayer.
It wasn't I don't think they're going to play him. If he's 80%, I don't think they're going to play him. That's a hammy is something that can go from a strain, and we can talk to Doc about this tomorrow, to something very significant. Very quickly.
But
so I don't think he even playing more if he's 75-80%.
I think if he's at 80%, it's going to be there. They will have to make a decision.
I wouldn't do that.
A decision.
I'm not playing him if he's 90%.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why I don't think he plays, and I certainly wouldn't play him unless that hamstring is like the planet's part and the sea's part, and it's the healthiest hamstring ever in 7 days. That's the only way I would play him.
My hamstring hurt when I saw his hamstring pull up like that, and I am worried about it because that looked bad. But
what
we'll
did Doc
out.
Say? The shots that what do they call the PPP shots?
PRP. But
PRP.
That takes a little bit of time to actually kick in. This is more
what
electronic
if
stimulation.
Right after the game.
Heck, they can go in there. They can pull the blood out of there. They can do all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, you know why I wouldn't play Anthony
Best
Richardson,
medical treatment
too?
That you could possibly have.
Right.
I don't think they win the game with Anthony Richardson. I think they have a better chance of beating him later in the year once Anthony Richardson figures out what he's doing. Yeah, well, and the bottom line is he's throwing like 10 passes.
Right.
Now they've been
just so happens all
really
of them
good.
Yeah. So anyway, I know that there's
was an NFL throw.
You only got so many chances, and look, if he's
but
healthy,
you don't need to beat Alabama to accomplish your goal. This would be gravy, and this would be the undefeated season. But if you lose to Alabama on Saturday, all your goals are still in front of you.
Yeah, I just think that's a lofty, lofty goal.
Well, of course it is. I don't know. I don't think they're going to beat Georgia, or I don't know if I'm going to pick them to beat Georgia. But it's the fact still remains, if you beat Bama, your goals are still in front of you.
If he plays, and he plays in the next two or three games, gets, you know, he's the quarterback, I'm picking him to beat Georgia. I can
you
tell
get
that
him,
right now.
You get them in your house with a minimal amount of starts. There are only so many chances.
Let me tell you something. 15 is a bad man.
Yeah.
There's I'm only you guys so that many right chances. Now, that's a unique dude.
Yeah.
Now, the two-minute drill, brought to you by Tire Outlet, keeping 1010XL on track with wholesale prices and premium service. Tire Outlet, Jacksonville's largest locally owned automotive repair shop.
Short show. Lauren Brooks joins us now. The Frangie Show getting ready to roll. What is up?
Oh, yes. It's a short show for you guys, and then a short show for us. And then we've got Jaguars programming, and then Hummus and Heels takes over. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, that's right.
It's a fun day.
Yeah, you'll instead of like your hour off.
Correct. Yeah. I have 2 hours off. What will I do?
You can really plan and have a nice meal to go
before
along with.
Before I ate, now I'll just eat even more. That's
now,
what I'll do.
We don't know what's going to happen with Anthony Richardson. Nobody does. We are all guessing.
But I loved his tweet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
About how he could have hit 22 miles per hour if he hadn't pulled had the hammy issue at the 50.
He's just so cool to watch, is he not? And, I mean, that's got to get Gator fans just on their ear right now.
Look, all summer, it felt like there was a lack of praise for Emory Jones coming out of Gainesville, whether it was the very secret workouts and things like that, or if it was just when Dan Mullen would meet with the media, or just in general, there just was no buzz around Emory Jones. And so I started to really doubt that he was going to be the guy to take over for Trask. And then now all of a sudden, you know, Dan Mullen throws Anthony Richardson in, and it's very, you know, at this point, not surprising that Gator fans are clamoring for him because he's insane. And so I'm starting to wonder, did Dan Mullen almost like make it harder on himself by not just playing Emory in those first two games and then all of a sudden unleashing AR-15 against Alabama for the first time and then he'd be healthy? Like, of course the fans are going to want to see more of him. But now you've got the possible injury and then you've got how does he, you know, mix up the snaps. I have no idea what to expect Saturday.
Yeah.
No idea.
Health is the biggest thing. What's coming up this afternoon?
Sure. So speaking of AR-15, we will talk to Denny Thompson at 3:20. And before that, we will talk to Greg McGarity, executive director of the Gator Bowl, coming up at 2:40.
Denny trained Anthony, and he knows him very well from Gainesville Eastside. All right, Lauren, we appreciate it.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to give us any special insight, though.
No.
I don't think so. I saw people asking him on Twitter, and he's like, I cannot divulge that information.
Don't think I'm not going to ask him about that off-air before before Gator Bites tomorrow on 1010XL.com.
I want to know whether Denny's putting the ace bandage on that hamstring. Giving them that.
Are you kidding? Denny's in Gainesville giving them the rub right now. Denny wants nothing more than that kid to play.
Yeah,
you
what is that?
Me?
That miracle ice that they put on.
Well, clear magic spray.
I'm doing Gator fans a favor, and Leon's going to do Gator fans a favor because Alabama beat Miami 2 weeks ago. It was a 3:30 kick. Game ended around 7:00. So on Thursday, we're going to do an hour-by-hour synopsis of the coping process of losing by 30 to Alabama. What did we and JJ? Maybe you could chime in on this as well.
Yeah, 2 hours before kickoff, start drinking tequilas by the pool is what I did.
Okay, well that's good. That's a good.
He
good
found
start.
Tequilas with like lemon. Right? What
did
you do?
Oh, it was great. Well, lemonade, a little bit of lemon as well, and then the little Sprite at the top.
But it's like, what do you do at 7:00? What do you do at 8:00? What do you do at 9:00 that night after a 44-13 beating?
You're not losing by 30. It's not happening.
Yeah. No. Okay. Whether they lose by 20 or by 40. I don't feel very confident in Florida's chances
I
on Saturday.
I think it's going to be like that.
No, your
game.
Feeling is because you had Chinese food last night.
You got
that's your feeling.
Right, I didn't, but all right.
Minimum of 20.
I'm taking Alabama in the points, and I feel fantastic about that.
What's the line I would right love now? To take Alabama in the points,
the line's
too.
18?
That would be
awesome. No, it's like 14.5, I think.
Alabama and the points would be awesome.
Oh, no, I'm taking Florida in the points, I mean.
Yeah.
I'm taking Alabama to win the game.
And laying the points.
And laying the
there
points.
There you go.
That's
there
right.
you go. We are out. Beaver Chevrolet, Beaver Toyota, thanks to both of them. Don't forget Beaver Chevy. Knowles fans missed out this week. Gators fans, 20 or more points from your squad, you get to go in and take advantage of the 10-10 special. 10 plus 10 equals 20. That's 20 off your oil change. Ask for the 10-10 special when you head into Beaver Chevrolet. We will be back with a full 3 hours tomorrow at high noon. Joe C., Ryan the Hacker Green, Matty Hayes, Big Sirs, and J.J. LaSalva. For Angie Show, rolling in.